Clayton. John Clayton.
Enough! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
He's with us every day at 4 o'clock with Bob, Dave, and Moore. We're talking about the Professor John Clayton, who's here. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
Wow. Well, how about that game last night, huh?
Pretty good.
Pretty good. Did you, when they were up by 17, were you like the rest of us that have been just conditioned to believe, yeah, it's going to come down to the end and it's going to get close, and they just don't blow teams out?
No. I mean, but I think that's what it's getting to be, and that's kind of the quirky personality of this team, is that they'll take a lead and look like it's all going to end up being a big win, and then all of a sudden, next thing you know, the other team's coming back.
Yeah, John, what was the attitude like over there on the sidelines? We were talking about Kirk Cousins not very accurate last night, and he got flustered a little bit. And did you see anybody blow up or anything over there on the sidelines, Zimmer?
No. I mean, no blow-ups or anything of that nature. I mean, you can see fatigue on the defensive guys, particularly with all the running plays, the 43 running plays that are going against the defense. That certainly showed. And I think that you could see that offensively, because that's the thing I was so amazed at, because I know that was one of the things I was hoping to get into during the game, is that, you know, they came back 14 points pretty quick, even though they don't have in this stage a three receiver offense. I mean, they were doing it with two wide receivers and two tight ends, and that's just rare to be able to do it like that. I mean, so with that personnel group, you figure, okay, you know, the tight ends are going to be slower than the receivers, and yet they come back and they get two touchdown drives. I mean, it certainly helped that Kyle Rudolph was making one-handed catch after one-handed catch. He had two big ones like that. But, you know, in the end, it's like you knew all Seattle had to do was, you know, get the ball, make sure that they didn't make a mistake, and then finally run out the clock. And that was the thing that's so different, and why, you know, people keep on talking about, gee, they lost home field advantage. And I know from being on the field, the noise was there. You heard the noise and how loud the crowd is. But what's amazing in the three games, particularly the two that they lost in this one, they just, the mistakes. You know, big mistakes. Now, it didn't have any holding penalties. A penalty situation was real good last night, thanks to Cleek Blakeman not allowing the guys to play. But, I mean, the turnover, the fumble, those type of things kind of betrayed this team. And yet, the defense was able to overcome it, and Russell Wilson was able to overcome it.
When's the last time you remember a total of four penalties, John? I mean, especially in this day and age, that was amazing. Is this, by any chance, a trend that they're going to start to try to, you know, maybe call less, not be such a big part of the game?
Well, I guess you could say they probably treated it like a Gene Steratore playoff game, or maybe Bill Vinovich. Bill Vinovich is one of the best in not calling too many penalties and allowing guys to play. But, Cleveland, he's been up and down, because I know there's some games where he'll call 20. This one he called four, only one on Seattle. But it's good to see. And, you know, I hope that that's going to be the trend, because we don't want to see the official. You want to see the game. And, you know, it's particularly as bad as it is right now with pass interference and all that stuff. So I thought that was kind of encouraging.
Hey, John, how impressed were you with Rashad Penny last night?
Really, really impressed. And I'm impressed even talking to him, because I know I interviewed him for the show today. And, you know, you can see in several ways he's comfortable. And I think what it is, the way he explains it, is that both he and Chris Carson came from the humble backgrounds where nothing was given to them. They had to work. Okay, so now here's Chris Carson coming in as a seventh-round pick, and he's established himself as the best back in the team. So now you get Penny. He's a first-round pick, and he came in, and I don't know if you want to say he acted like a first-round pick, but he got to 238, too much McDonald's, he said, and he didn't probably study the game as much as he could. Then this offseason, he developed a really close relationship with Chris Carson, so tight right now that Chris even called himself off the field to get Penny on there at the 1 yard line to try to score a touchdown. I mean, you don't see that type of stuff. But he's 231 as of last week. He wants to get down to 225. His quickness is there, his talent's there. But it's you talk about a flip flop. I mean, here's back in his next to last year in college, Carson was a guy that wasn't physical enough and was, as he said, you know, his teammates would say, you're just not tough. You don't really get that way.
They said that to Chris Carson?
No, yeah, the teammates did.
Oh, back my gosh.
In college.
Yeah.
And so he toughened up, and you can see what he ended up doing. Now he's become one of the toughest backs in football. And here's Penny, who was just so natural. As he said, he didn't play high school football until his sophomore year. That was the first he put it. So he didn't have the natural instincts or anything like that. And so he goes to San Diego State, and even though they had Donnell Pumphrey, who was drafted by the Eagles, you know, they kept on giving Penny the ball, and he would gain 10, 15 yards or whatever. He kept on breaking big runs. And so he kind of exploded on the scene. Then he comes here as the first round pick. And then, you know, Carson, it was just better. And so he never got the chance to really take over. But now they're a good 1-2 punch, but even better, they're close friends.
Yeah. So expound on that a little bit. You talked to Penny. Did you talk to Carson as well?
I did not talk to Carson last night.
But just what Penny had to say about that, it's pretty rare, you know. And when Carson tapped himself out, I thought, well, he's gassed or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, just what did he have to say about that? I mean, that's pretty special. It's pretty rare.
Yeah, but what was said by by Penny is that what happened was that and this is, I guess, what good friends they are. You know, maybe it was a matter that Carson felt, you know, maybe I'm not really up for this next play. Let Penny come on the field and let's give him a chance to get his confidence even better. And so he allowed that to happen. He said, but as Penny said, he said, now you got to understand. We're competitors. We're competing for playing time. Neither of us are going to concede playing time, but I think that they're good enough friends that it's like, hey, I'll give you this one, Rashad. Do the best you can, and I'll go get the next one.
It's pretty special. I don't know if that happens under any coach in the NFL other than Pete Carroll.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, that was the big thing, because I know I wrote this today for 710sports.com, is that you had so many of the guys that were doing a lot of things for each other, and this is where this team concept is so good. And, like, for example, talk to Jadeveon Clowney. And I mean, he was in such pain after the game that, you know, you try to get his memories. Like, it's my first question is, how's a guy with a core injury that might require surgery run 20 yards downfield like he did to make a big play or try to make a big play? And he says, I have no idea. He's like, I said, were you on a pitch count? He says, nobody told me about a pitch count, but if there was, I wouldn't know anything about it. I'm just trying to get through each play. But he's doing this. And, you know, even though he won't admit it, you know, surgery's in the wings for him. He's going to have core surgery at some point. But he's doing enough for the team that because he loves his team, he realizes it's the best team he's ever been on, and he's going to go as long as he humanly can to try to get the right plays and do the right things.
Hey, John, you've got three teams in the NFC that are 10-2. How would you rank them? The Saints, the Seahawks, and the 49ers?
Yeah, that was easy. That's easy right now because, I mean, you put the Saints number one. I'm sorry, you put Baltimore number one. You put the Saints number two, and you put the Seahawks number three. And why do you say that? Well, what two teams has the Seahawks lost to? Baltimore and New Orleans. Which teams has San Francisco lost to? They lost to Baltimore. You know, so with New Orleans getting a win over Seattle and a possible win over San Francisco, you put them up top, and then you put Baltimore right next. Now, you can flip the two and say maybe but put Baltimore. But remember, the Saints have already clinched the division. They're in great shape as far as everything going for them. And if they beat the 49ers on Sunday, then it's clear they're the number one seed at the moment.
So we should root for the Saints to lose.
No?
No?
Oh, no. You want the division.
Well, the Seahawks are in control of it. They control their own destiny right now.
Yeah, but what if they lose?
They're not going to lose, John. How dare you?
Well, I would say they can. I mean, I just think that there's going to be a loss in the last four games because I think they're going to finish 3-1. I can't tell you what the loss is going to be. But the most important thing, because look at where the difference is. Okay, if you lose the division to San Francisco, mm-hmm. then now you're going to be playing at Dallas most likely, and now you have to win three games on the road just to get to the Super Bowl. I mean, win the division. And so it's you root like crazy, if you're a Seahawk fan, for the 49ers to lose and the Saints to win, because that's almost getting too greedy. It's like, oh, okay, well, we want the number one seed. Yeah, it'd be nice to do, and you can still get it, but, you know, get it from another team, San Francisco, because you want the division.
I think John just called me greedy.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if I agree with you on that one, Professor. Because if San Francisco and Seattle are within one game of each other coming into that last game of the season, mm-hmm. it's just going to hinge on that game anyway.
Yeah, but what happens if San Francisco loses another game and all of a sudden that game is not going to be as meaningful and you can start resting some players, which isn't a bad idea. So, no, it's like you want the division. The division's the most important thing. The Saints already have it, and, of course, now they're trying to play for the number one seed. But, you know, now you can control your own destiny, but do you have total control? No. I mean, that's why any coach, I mean, and Dave will tell you what Chuck Knox would always say about that. You know, the first objective is to win the division. Pete will say the same thing, but, you know, win the division. But so you want more losses in the division than losses on the outside.
And that's what we did in 1988. We went out and dominated the AFC West with a 9-7 record. But we won. We won the division.
It's a winning team.
All right, John, we all thought this was kind of a tough one. Who would be the MVP from last night? Whose performance by the Seahawks would be MVP of the game?
But that's a tough one because, again, it's all pretty well shared around. And so you'd probably have to think that, you know, Chris Carson, obviously, you know, you can put Russell Wilson all the time. So in that regard, I mean, Bobby Wagner, I think, to a certain degree, you know, the combination of Diggs and, you know, Bradley McDougal, I mean, they'd be in there. But, I mean, you know, Chris Carson ran the ball so hard. And then, of course, all the offensive linemen, I don't think you can identify one of them. Yeah. But, I mean, obviously the key to the game was 43 rushes for 218 yards.
That's amazing. That is one of the tougher physical front sevens in the league.
Yeah.
And saw Joey Hunt moving guys. Yeah. So technically Carson had two more yards of all-purpose yardage than Penny, but I went with Penny. And I guess it's more than anything, it's just that I'm happy to see that he is having the kind of career that, like, he's found something. You know, it's like it's clicked for him. So, mm-hmm.
And you can just see, you know, how excited he was after the game. I mean, you can just see. I mean, he's wearing the Sonics jersey, and you know, he's comfortable now. And you know, he thought that you know, things were going to come faster and all that, but now it's coming. Of course, I mean, and believe me, you can tell in his voice he's heard every criticism sure. that's been out there. I mean, you know, it's like he's not ignoring the fact that some people wanted him traded. Some people thought the Seahawks made a mistake by not taking a third-round pick from Detroit. That would have, and I kept on saying that would be a big mistake because what you want is that you know, maybe if it's a second, it's a different story. Third-rounder, no, you need Penny. And now look what Penny's doing for this team, making it a great 1-2 punch.
Hey, John, Josh Gordon, one target last night, one catch, was on third down again. It seems to be his spot. But why isn't he more of a target?
Well, I think, again, it's like the key right now is trying to run the football. I mean, it's not like they're overdoing it, particularly in a game where you have 43 rushing plays that you're going overboard trying to, you know, get the passes and doing all this stuff. And I don't know what it is that there's such a comfort level right now with Jacob Hollister getting him the ball, you know, 5-6 times a game. But, you know, he's still kind of fitting in there. I mean, you know, and part of it is he's not on the field all the time. You know, Jaron Brown was active and they had him on the field. David Moore's active. I mean, it's not one where it's like they're spreading the wealth, I guess you can say, where it's like, okay, they're going to use more guys, use different things, be specific with it. I mean, you can see Josh Gordon is so good with the slant pass. That's what so far he's been able to do in just about every catch he's had in Seattle has been a slant pass, and he's really good at it. But, you know, I don't think at this stage they're caring about, you know, who's catching what. Just make sure you catch the ball.
I hope Russ doesn't forget about his bestest buddy, though, Tyler Lockett. There was a throw he made to Hollister. I feel like that he's got, like, this connection with Hollister all of a sudden. But there was a throw on an out route that he threw to Hollister, and you can see Tyler Lockett was hooked up about 5 yards downfield. And yeah, it's just weird to look at the pass catches. It went Metcalf as far as targets. Actually, Hollister was targeted the most, then Metcalf, and then, you know, Rashad Penny, David Moore, Josh Gordon. I mean, it's all the time we spent worrying about who's going to fill in the void for Doug Baldwin. It's just coming from all kinds of different places.
It is, and that's where I think that, you know, varied things. And, I mean, I noticed just being on the field that they were doing some double coverage on Tyler, trying to take him away. And, you know, I think what the story that's underneath the story is the fact that he was one of the 8 guys with the flu. And so I think he may have lost about 10 pounds. And so then you have the combination where in the Philadelphia game, he lost some speed because of the injury to his leg. And now you come back and you take, you know, 10 pounds away. Because I think even Tyler might have said it, that, you know, both he and David Moore had to be helped a lot by Luke Wilson to kind of keep their minds in the game, as you know, tough as it was coming off the flu. And don't underestimate how bad that flu thing was. I mean, you know, you have that's why I'm amazed that you could have David Moore getting a big long touchdown catch and then being able to have all the strength to be able to do the new addition dance and do it very well and being the lead of the new addition dance. So I thought that was good. And then, of course, that interception by Trey Flowers was remarkable. And it's like, we know he has skinny thighs and skinny legs and all that stuff, but then to be even 12 pounds skinnier, wow.
Yeah, and so, and you didn't get any of that crud, did you, John? You didn't get sick?
I'm sick as a dog. But,
oh, you are? Okay. Yeah, everybody.
I don't have the crud. I just, I'm just sick.
Yeah. Well, and what was the deal with the Canadian onesies again now?
Luke Wilson was taking care of Moore and Lockett, and so that
in
was
what way?
A tribute to them. I'm not sure.
Do we know? He was just encouraging.
I just read about it in the Seattle Times.
Yeah, okay. those were pretty ugly looking onesies.
Yeah, there.
But I think that was the point, right?
John? Yeah, but it is interesting that, I mean, here's David Moore and Diggs coming in dressed up like pajamas.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did.
Kind of weird.
All right, John, I have something to cheer you up, though.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay, sit down. Are you seated?
Yeah.
Okay. Minshew Mania is back, John.
I know.
Minshew Mania is back. You said that Nick Foles was going to be there the rest of the time, but I guess we didn't realize that Nick Foles was going to be as bad as he's been.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what is it? He's been outscored by 70-some points in the four games that he's had, and it's a desperation move because, you know, here he is. He's 0-4, 0-3 since coming back from the injury. Their offense is doing nothing, and so now Minshew Mania is back, but also it's like, okay, Minshew Mania and Nick Foles will be together next year with probably a new coaching staff.
Yeah, what are they going to do with Foles?
Nothing.
Think they'll trade him in the offseason?
I don't know if anybody wants to pick up a $22 million contract. Because, again, it's like, they'll take a big cap hit. I think 15 point some million dollars of his contract, base salaries all guaranteed. And, if he's not going to play like a $22 million quarterback, I mean, there's other options. And so, they may be stuck with him if that's the case.
Can you imagine, like, you're a quarterback like that and like, yeah, I had a really crummy year, and I'm going to pocket about $20 million.
Yeah.
How about that?
You know what we call that? An Osweiler. Brock Osweiler. You remember that $19 million contract? It was so onerous that the Houston Texans, had to give up a second-round pick to get the Cleveland Browns to take it.
That's right.
Hey, John Ron Rivera fired by the Panthers today. Was he the guy you thought would be the first one to go?
No, I didn't. I thought he would be one of the last ones. In fact, I wrote this for the Post that, I went through the seven or eight coaching changes that I thought would happen. And I said, well, the good news is I think all these guys are going to be able to finish out the season. And so I've turned out to be wrong on that because David Tepper, my buddy from Pittsburgh, can't sleep after bad losses. And he's had four bad losses. And so instead of taking sleeping pills, he decided to fire Ron Rivera, even though it was meaningless because, they'll be eliminated from the playoffs next week. And what's the advantage of making a coaching change? It's not like they're going to have Perry Fuel come in and be the head coach. He's now the interim coach. So that's not going to work out. And I just didn't see the advantage because, at least with Ron, you can take the tack. It's like, okay, Ron, we're going to fire you after the season. We want you to take a look at the young guys. You coach them up and you do that. But I guess Tepper was so mad that he wanted to move and he wanted it now.
Did you hear the comment from Jerry Jones about Jason Garrett saying, yes. Well, he'll be coaching in the NFL next year somewhere?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. So he didn't commit to him coaching the Cowboys, but said he'll be coaching in the NFL next year.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was hysterical. But again, it's very telling that, now you can see. And by the way, the one stat that's kind of interesting, the NFC East this year at the moment is the worst division since the 2008 NFC West. And if you go back that far, what you remember, of course, that was the year that...
Wait, Pete's first year, wasn't it?
No, 2010 was his first year. And so in 2008, I mean, remember?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because that was the year that, Tom Brady got a knee injury, blew out his knee in the first game of the season.
Right. And Castle was there.
Yeah, and what you could see is that every team in the East was going to load up on the West because they were also playing the AFC West, which was equally bad. But, the records of the AFC or the NFC West on the winning percentage outside the division games was 341. Right now, the NFC East is 333. That's how bad it is. And, you know, it's like, how bad is it? The Redskins are sitting with one of the worst records in football at 3-9, and they haven't been eliminated from the playoffs. They're still in the mix because of the division. And, after on Monday, Doug Peterson of the Eagles was asked about the playoff chances, and he says, I don't think we have any chance. I don't see it. And it's like, you're 5-7. You're one game behind a Cowboy team that can't beat a winning team.
That's what happens when you get your butt kicked by the Dolphins, though.
Yeah,
you
that's
give
true.
Up 30-plus points to the Dolphins. You feel like there's no hope.
Yeah, I could see that.
Hey, John, so it looks like the Rams got it going against the Cardinals, and Gurley had over 100 yards in all-purpose, 95 of it rushing, and Goff threw for 424. I mean, is this a case, do you think, of them having Arizona's number? Or this is a mysterious team to me. I'm going into this game this week. I think it's going to be really interesting to see. I feel like I know who the Seahawks are, but I don't quite know who the Rams are.
No, and I think that is a legitimate question. But then remember, who doesn't have Arizona's number on defense? I mean, everybody does. And so they're the worst defense in football. And so you can put up good numbers on them. It makes them feel bad for the offensive guys because Kyler Murray has basically very little chance. And, again, there's talent there. And maybe the confidence coming from that game can help. But I wouldn't overrate it and I wouldn't overdo it because, they were just so bad on defense. I mean, you saw San Francisco, they had trouble stopping Kyler Murray in the running offense, but they were able to put up a lot of points and a lot of yards.
Yeah, they hung in there with the Niners pretty good, though. Mm-hmm. Arizona did.
No, and the reason is that, and you can see this in Seattle, you can certainly see it in a lot of teams right now. Minnesota's had the same problem. Most of the teams that are even with good defenses struggle against running quarterbacks. The running quarterbacks right now have an edge.
John, good stuff. We appreciate it. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. There's the Professor John Clayton with us. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com.